Welcome to the program for Friday, April 29th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown. We do it every Friday at 3. Today is working a little bit differently because, quite honestly, we don't have air conditioning in the studio, and both of my guests said it's going to be really hot in there with all three of us in the commensurate hot air. So I'm hosting on the phone today Alan Baludis of Cisco, joining me with his three most important federal news stories of the week. Alan, thanks for being on. I appreciate you joining me today.
I'm pleased to be here with you.
And I will say, you're pleased to not be in here with me, but to be on the phone. I guarantee you that, whether you know it or not. So thank you for being on, and we'll dig into your stories in just a moment. And my other guest on the Federal News Countdown this week is my colleague from the Federal Drive, Tom Temin. Thank you also, sir. And you were here this morning when it was about 5,000 degrees, so you know what Alan doesn't have to put up with.
Yes, that's right. Co-host Amy Morris and I were there. Well, we got into the studio, you know, close to 6 o'clock, and from 6 to 10, we sweated. So, hopefully they'll have air conditioning by Monday.
Well, I'm going to do all the sweating by myself, and you guys can enjoy the comfort as we start on the Federal News Countdown with the most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by each of you. And of course, we start with
number three.
Third most important federal news story of the week, according to Alan Baludis, is from the Washington Post about the closing of data centers across government. The number is 137, Alan, but is it the number that's really important, or is it the fact that this effort is really getting underway?
It's more the latter. I think the administration has already shut 39 of those centers, with 98 more to be closed by year's end. But the significance of this for me was as you looked at Vivek Kundra's very ambitious 25-point implementation plan designed to improve the delivery of IT services across the federal government. As you know, this city and this government don't lack for wonderful plans and strategies and the like, which never come to pass. And so I think many of us were looking for the what happens next. And I have to say, I've been impressed to date with what I've seen from OMB and from the Vivek's office in terms of actions taken. And this, of course, is one of them. I think the other aspect of this is that it does suggest to me that as part of the larger plan to move many of the federal government's IT functions to the cloud, that this suggests there may be more of a two-step kind of strategy to the effort, where government agencies move first to reduce and consolidate the number of data centers that they have in existence, and then begin to, once that's happened, begin to move more and more of those services to the cloud. Then may be affected too by the Amazon problems that cropped up this week with some of their cloud offerings that only touch tangentially on federal governments, but I think may be used really or irrationally by agencies as an argument not to move services so precipitously to the cloud.
Tom, a couple of people that I think are really smart mentioned this week that maybe this data center closure effort requires a kind of a BRAC-type effort, because the fear that these folks espoused was, what happens if 6 months from now some member of Congress goes to a CIO or somebody else at an agency and says, so, I hear you're going to close this data center that's in my district and we're not going to have X number of jobs. Let's talk about that at a hearing, and then plans change and things don't move along as expeditiously as Alan's talking about. Do you think there's anything to that?
I really don't, actually. And I agree with Alan. That's on my list of stories, too, is 137 data centers that were slated for closure. But if people actually knew what happens in a data center, they would realize that not very many people work there. Unless there's some large administrative office next to the data center, it doesn't take many people to operate it. So if something's a pure data center, you may be only talking 15, 20 jobs, and maybe only a couple of those are federal jobs, and the rest would be contractor jobs. So I think when it's right. I mean, you're right. The Congress may ask about it, but I think they're going to find that they're coming up with pretty slim pickings when it comes to the number of bodies involved.
All right.
Of course, Fran, can I just...
Yeah, sure. Dr.
I mean, remember, though, the potential of this is huge. I mean, this is just the first bite, these 137 of the 2,094 federal data centers that exist, that spend close to, I think the estimate is roughly $24 billion of the $80 billion we spend each year on IT is spent on data centers and their operations. And I think this is maybe a little trickier in the sense that I would expect most departmental appropriations bills require that if you're going to close an operation like this, it requires a reprogramming notice. So it's going to require the agency to notify the Hill of their plans and to normally wait for them to take action to approve it. So this actually may get a little dicier, and I've had the sad experience in my time in the federal government of having to keep offices open that only employed one or two federal government employees. So some of these things, the line can be drawn in the sand for a relatively small number of people, especially in tough economic times in small rural districts.
That's possible, although, Congressman Darrell Issa, I think it was, told agencies that if they have problems reprogramming, not so much in relation to data center, but in some other areas, he said, it was for e-government. He said, well, come see us. We'll make sure we can get you that help that you need because of the low funding for e-government that his own Congress, the Republican Congress, passed. But he was saying that, if you need some more money from another account, we'll help you do that. So I agree with you, Alan. You're right. But there might be some backdoor even to that because the Republicans are willing to, they're saying they're willing to help.
Well, we shall see.
We'll see.
Tom Davis tried to do the same thing and offer the same kind of help previously and to no avail in terms of overcoming Appropriations Committee opposition. But this will be interesting to watch this play out. And of course, I guess if you have this on your list too, Tom will get to discuss it and take another bite at this shortly.
And the only thing I would add is that I think I know where one of the data centers is. And if that's true, then it shares the same building with my gym. And it's the only one in the chain that doesn't have a swimming pool. So I'm hoping that the gym will expand into that space and add the rest of the facilities that everybody else has.
And after all, the Federal News Countdown when Tom Temin is on is, of course, all about Tom Temin.
That's right.
And in fact, Tom, your story number Alan, your story number three is from the Post. The headline is Government Closing Data Centers as Part of Federal IT Overhaul. And it's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Tom, your story number three is headlined Agencies Given 6 Months to Revamp Online Services. It's Jason Miller's story from federalnewsradio.com. But the part of this that you and I, as we talked about before we went on the air, the part of this that jumped out at both of us was the customer service parts of this that aren't just applicable to the IT community.
No, that's right. And I thought this was a big story, but it was also a little bit amusing because it's if they're suddenly discovering that the government has to have good customer service. And really, this whole effort of improving online goes back to when there first was online. And Alan can verify this. It actually predates the World Wide Web when it goes back to the SEC taking 10K quarterly reports online back in modem days. And you heard the same kind of discussion. We've got to get better on customer service. I first heard it when I got to Washington at the end of President George H.W. Bush's, Herbert Walker Bush administration. And so I felt like saying, golly, guys, welcome to the club. Now, this order, with some action. They have to pick a website, and they've got 6 months to overhaul it and make it more modern. But I think that this is going to be even a little more subtle in the data centers because there's nothing you can point at to federal websites that work so badly. What they need to do is maybe expand and get more services online. But the sites they have tend to do what they're designed to do.
Tom is right, Alan, but isn't it just within the past maybe 5 or so years where federal agencies have really committed to thinking about the people they serve as customers and understanding customer service? And before that, it struck me that most of the time people thought about citizens and people thought about the people that they served in a kind of a different way.
Well, I think it was a big part of the reinventing government effort. If you think back to Vice President Gore's efforts, a lot of those were around a government that works better and costs less, and the emphasis was then as much on the works better as on the costs less aspect, and certainly we have a lot of things that we can point to. I mean, back in 2001, the Internal Revenue Service processed 70% of its tax returns on paper and spent almost $4 per return. I think now they're processing pretty close to 70% electronically, and it costs less than 20 cents. And people are getting their refunds a lot sooner and quicker. So I think this demonstrates, I just argue that the technology is more powerful today and may enable us to do a lot better job as long as we balance the fiscal constraints, which are on everybody's mind today, with the idea that we could also at the same time perhaps do some things that can improve the delivery of services to the American public.
Sidebar, since it's not entirely about Tom Temin, I got my tax return filing electronically this year, my tax refund, I mean, in 6 days, direct deposit. That's pretty impressive to me.
Well, I'm glad you could take the conversation. I mean, the thought of you over there in your shorts sweltering. This whole show was going downhill as far as I was concerned.
Sorry I even brought it up. It is, it's the Federal News Countdown. Tom Temin's number 3 story of the week is from Federal News Radio. The headline is Agencies Given 6 Months to Revamp Online Services. It's the Federal News Countdown stories all posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back for the number 2 stories of the week from Tom Temin and Alan Baludis when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues.
Springtime flowers are bursting out everywhere. A Harvard professor didn't just accept the beauty, he wondered how it worked. Surprisingly, the way flowers bloom was a bit of a mystery. So Harvard professor Mahadevan, an applied mathematician, looked at it with an engineer's eye and noticed the wrinkled edges on lily petals. Then he peeled back an unbloomed bud and
found that the petals start to have wrinkled edges even before they have been exposed, suggesting that the edges are growing earlier than the rest of the petal.
Mahadevan proved this with experiments and showed that this uneven growth causes petals to break away from the bud.
Our explanation transcends the specific instance of the blooming flower,
so it may provide ideas for useful new engineering designs. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
How old were you when you stopped playing? Chances are it didn't happen overnight. As you grew up, information got elevated, imagination got downgraded. We stopped playing and started stressing. Kaiser Permanente encourages you to follow your kid's lead and put some play back in your day. It's as natural and necessary as sleep. Physically, play boosts immune function, lowers blood pressure and cholesterol. And what it does for your emotional and mental health is pure refreshment. Toss a ball around and see how it lightens your mood. Notice how a hand of cards changes your outlook. Jump rope and watch your creativity soar. Best of all, play keeps you young, like no pill, no program, no procedure can. So take that kayak lesson you've been putting off. Learn a new song on the piano. The truth is, the day you stop playing is the day you start aging. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark.
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. The National Security Agency is making a concerted effort to bring in more small business contractors. We'll hear how from the agency's outreach advocate. Plus, USAID and NASA partner to get more satellite data into the hands of developing countries. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown, and this week on the countdown, Alan Baludis of Cisco and Tom Temin, my colleague at Federal News Radio, are counting down the three most important federal news stories of the week. And Alan Baludis's story number two is from the Hill newspaper, and the headline is House Republicans Mull Plan to Hike Debt Ceiling Every 2 Months. And this is the kind of nickel and dime deal that we saw with the continuing resolution, where we'll do a short one and then we'll do a short one and we'll do a short one. But the whole relationship, Alan, is not self-evident to everybody, I think. The relationship between the 2012 budget, the debt ceiling being raised, and all of that, it's not as obvious, I think, as the continuing resolution was.
Well, I think they're all part and parcel of a larger problem. You know, of course, we stumbled through this last fiscal year with six continuing resolutions before the House and the Senate finally agreed and the President signed the seventh CR that carries us through the end of this fiscal year. And of course, the irony within this issue of the $38.5 billion of budget cuts that were hammered out as part of that actually only produced $352 million in actual savings this year, which reflects the difference between budget authority and actual obligations. Now you carry on this into the 2012 budget. You have the issue of extending the debt ceiling. Agencies are trying at this very time to put together their budget plans for the next fiscal year. It honestly, you look at it and you step back and you say, this is one of the greatest nations on the face of the earth? We're like a developing country where they seem to stumble from crises to crises. And as somebody put it to me when we were talking about some strategic effort, planning effort, he said, "Alan, how can we plan? We can't even budget."
Tom, what do you take away from this whole conversation? And it seems to me that the whole debt ceiling thing is not as easy to explain for either side politically as the continuing resolution was, or whatever's going to be debated about the 2012 budget.
Well, I think Alan had a really important point there where he asked the rhetorical question, is this a great nation if this is how we behave? And, you know, the other thing that happened in connection with this in the past week, might have been late last week, I think it was early this week, was the threat of lowering the credit rating of the United States by
Standard & Poor's. Very good point, Tom.
And so, you know, the fact is that a nation doesn't stay great by virtue of being great. You can, by mismanagement, mishandling by the drip, drip, drip of this kind of thing reduce a great nation, just like any great institution can be destroyed by people that don't care for it. And so it takes a lot of care and feeding to keep that strength up. And so I think the fiscal irresponsibility and then the playing chicken with this debt ceiling issue, I mean, they're all part and parcel. I agree with Alan to the same thing, and that's a failure to get serious. You know, I was having this argument with someone, a relative who works for the government, saying about this whole debt ceiling issue and the deficit issue, and he said, well, look, the people want these services, and they want what the government gives, and at the same time they say they want the deficit down, so what are you going to do? And my answer to that is that's when you need politicians to show leadership and to lead the way and take what lumps might they have to take to really attack some of these issues. I don't see that happening by either party.
Alan Baludis' story number two on the countdown is headline, House Republicans mull plan to hike debt ceiling every 2 months, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It is the Federal News Countdown with Tom Temin and Alan Baludis, and we'll get to Tom's story number two in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Alan Hecht, Director for Sustainable Development from the Environmental Protection Agency, commented during the panel discussion, Beyond Green, Making Sustainability Sustainable.
There are 435 green labels out there. And the consumer world and consumers are saying, are these green? Is this greenwashing? What is green? And they are supportive of wanting to protect the environment.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Booz Allen.
Amid challenging budgetary and regulatory circumstances, government agencies are under increased pressure to improve operational efficiency and account for impacts to the environment, our natural resources, and society. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton have over 30 years of experience helping organizations assess, improve, and implement their sustainability initiatives, going beyond compliance to integration with and enhancement of the agency's mission. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is cholesterol management, featuring Dr. Lan Nguyen, Chief of Adult Primary Care in Northern Virginia for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Cholesterol is essential for the human body to function, but high cholesterol can be very harmful. High cholesterol promotes plaques to build up in the arteries, blocking blood flow, which can contribute to a heart attack or a stroke. Here are tips to manage your cholesterol. Know your numbers. First, measure your cholesterol levels every 5 years if you are over age of 20. Remember, your LDL should be low and HDL should be high for optimal levels. Get at least 30 minutes of physical activity a day to lower your risk of heart disease. Maintain a healthy weight. If you are overweight, lose 5 to 10 pounds can help lower your risks. Disease prevention is the best way to help you stay well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Post Office doing to reduce its carbon footprint? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance? How are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
HCMF Federal Recruitment and Talent Management Strategy Day is a one-day training conference to be held Wednesday, May 4th, 2011 in Washington, D.C. The conference will focus on new opportunities for bringing in top talent to the federal government, such as marketing and brand strategies, investing in employee development, and more. Keynotes will be presented by OPM Director John Barry, as well as presentations from seven other Chief Human Capital Officers. For more information, please visit hcmfrecruitmentday.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown My guests counting down the three most important federal news stories of the week as they have chosen them and ranked them in order are Alan Baludis of Cisco and Tom Temin, my colleague here at Federal News Radio. And Tom, your story number two this week is headlined, Tornado Survivors Pick Up Pieces as Obama Visits. The president's in Alabama today, or was in Alabama today, before heading to Florida for the space shuttle launch that didn't happen. And you can find out about that at federalnewsradio.com. But this situation in Alabama, as tragic as all of these are. But the story that you chose, I think, is interesting because it kind of indicates what some of the misunderstandings about the federal response to these things are. There's a passage in this story about a resident of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who was interviewed by the writers of this story, and he says about the president coming, hopefully he'll give us some money to start over. Is FEMA here? The only place I'm hearing anything is at the Red Cross Center. Now, I don't know how many disasters you and I have covered since we've been covering the federal government, but FEMA says the same thing every time. It's organizations like the Red Cross and local responders that are supposed to be first on the scene. So it sounds like, although this man wasn't getting what he expected, it sounds like that's maybe an expectations issue.
Well, that's right. I think this story has all of the elements. First of all, we should note that for the government itself, there were some major power outages at the Redstone Arsenal at the in Huntsville, Alabama, and also at the Marshall Space Flight Center. And a couple of other places, the Tennessee Valley Authority lost power, and so the worry there was nuclear plants, and you know what happens when they lose power, just ask the people in Japan. So this is a great test, an unfortunate test, but a real test for continuity of operations, and then getting to the service to the citizen, if you will, angle, that's right. This is the Obama administration's Katrina in many ways. Thank God it's not quite that bad, but it's pretty bad with, you know, several hundred people killed and the destruction is just unbelievable to behold. And so I think all eyes are on how this responds, you know, how FEMA responds and how the federal government helps the rebuilding effort generally. You know, given the fiscal condition of the states, this is beyond any locality or county or state to be able to help the people in the way that they probably would like to. So I think this was a big story. I mean, it's a fascinating story in terms of weather, and it's a great human tragedy in terms of the loss of life. But it's also a coup test for the government and also a response test. I call it Obama administration's Katrina.
You know, the sheer number of these storms and the swath they cut across such a substantial part of the country is just incredible. And having looked at this to some extent in the past in the Department of Commerce with the National Weather Service as part of the department, I mean, this is really almost unprecedented weather event.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's been 40 years since they've had this kind of thing. And so, you know, as the president pointed out, we can't predict when these things will occur or where they will occur. But we can control how we respond. And so I think people are saying and looking, how do we respond? And Francis, you're right. I mean, FEMA became the go-to agency after Katrina because the name of the agency belies what it really does. But I think they were trying to reorganize around the name, that is to be the first responder. But they're really not the first responder, but people expect them to be the first responder, and they've got to fix that. They haven't fixed it since Katrina.
I wonder what the role is of not just the agency itself, but the state and local authorities that are, in many cases, FEMA people have said to me, listen, the state and local people want to be known as the first responders, as the immediate people of responsibility, points of authority, and have us. They want us to be the support, the backup, the coming in several hours after to help them do whatever they need to do. And so I wonder if maybe there isn't some responsibility on their parts to let people know, hey, we're the ones that are supposed to be coming and helping you immediately.
Well, that's right. Although in this case, I'll bet you there were a lot of police stations that were wrecked. And police vehicles and fire stations were probably destroyed also. So it might be bigger than any one jurisdiction. But yes, I mean, the first responders, the federal government has always regarded state and local officials as the first responders.
Alan, one of the things that I was talking about at a panel that I attended this morning, an FCA Bethesda panel, was the idea of trying to stand up any kind of technology to do some response in a situation like this. And I can only imagine that the IT shop at DHS and specifically at FEMA must just be going crazy, working 48-hour days to try to get what the people there need to be able to help these folks.
Well, I think, again, when you see this type of thing happen, I think it's the full brunt of the federal government that's brought to bear to try to help in this regard. So certainly a lot of it happens in FEMA. The Coast Guard, of course, was a big player during Katrina. But you'll also get assistance from the Small Business Administration, from parts of the Department of Commerce, often the military and the National Guard is called in. So it's I think FEMA is besides supposedly being one of the first on the scenes, they're also normally delegated as the coordinator of the federal presence, so they take charge over all the other federal entities that are brought in to bear to help in this kind of situation, and that coordinative role is a big part of their responsibilities.
The number two story of the week, as chosen by Tom Temin on the Federal News Countdown, is headline, Tornado Survivors Pick Up Pieces as Obama Visits. It's about, in part, the federal response to the tornadoes that ripped through Alabama and other parts of the South. And you can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The number one story of the week, as chosen by Alan Balutis and Tom Temin, is next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In-Depth with Francis Rose.
NBC News Radio, I'm Kelly O'Donnell. The South picks up the pieces as President Obama assesses the damage from a deadly and devastating series of tornadoes. In Alabama today, he pledged all the help the federal government can give.
I want to just make a commitment to the communities here that we are going to do everything we can to help these communities rebuild.
Just hours before the launch of the space shuttle today, NASA scrubbed it. NBC's Jay Barbary says it was due to mechanical trouble with the auxiliary power unit on Endeavor.
So that they can get in tune with what's happening with these power units.
There's word the next launch attempt will be Monday at the earliest. And this morning, Britain's Prince William took a wife.
I, William Arthur Philip Louis.
Take thee, Catherine Elizabeth.
Take thee, Catherine Elizabeth.
To my wedded wife.
To my wedded wife.
The couple sealed their wedding with a pair of kisses on a balcony at Buckingham Palace, to the delight of thousands of flag-waving spectators. I'm Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News Radio.
At CarMax, we know honesty is the key to providing great customer service. However, we also understand that there are times when you're better off not being honest. For instance, when filling out the What I Look For in a Person section of your online dating profile, you may not want to write, My mother. But when a customer asks us to appraise their car, we know this calls for total honesty. Not only do our buyers have an offer ready in 30 minutes, you can have up to 7 days to think about it or walk away with payment in hand. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The Home Depot has made a special buy on 1 cubic foot bags of Miracle-Gro garden soil for flowers and vegetables. Right now, buy one, get one free. Plan on bigger plants, brighter colors, and enough savings for a few extra ingredients in your summer salads. We're lowering the cost of breaking new ground with Miracle-Gro garden soil. Buy one, get one free. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Val through May 1st, while supplies last. U.S. only. See store for details.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Christy Romero is the acting special inspector general for TARP.
We ended up questioning two-thirds of Venable's bill, which was over $676,000. And we concluded that OFS practices create an unacceptable risk that Treasury and really the American taxpayer is overpaying for legal services.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week in the 3 o'clock hour, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important to people who work for the government. Rank them in order from number 3 to number 1 and then count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. This week, our experts in the world of the federal government are Alan Baludis of Cisco and Tom Temin, my colleague who is one of the co-anchors along with Amy Morris of the Federal Drive on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every morning between 6 and 10. And we're up to, on the countdown,
number one.
And you guys have chosen different takes on the same story as the most important federal news story of the week, and that is the changes in the national security structure and the defense structure. Secretary Robert Gates will leave the Pentagon at the end of June and nominated to take his place Leon Panetta, who is currently the CIA director and, of course, has held a number of jobs in both the legislative branch and the executive branch of government. David Petraeus will retire from his military position as the head of operations in Afghanistan and go to take over Mr. Panetta's current job as the director of Central Intelligence, and some other jobs that are changing, and we'll talk about those in just a moment. But, Alan, I wondered what it was about all of this that that got your attention the most, because these are really some pretty complex and deep changes. There are a lot of layers to peel away here.
Yeah, there are indeed, and it was some of those other aspects of the story that struck me. I mean, one is what remains an ongoing concern with some people about senior military officials moving into top positions in the intelligence community. We've had this in the past with ODNI and now with the CIA, and so I think there's a general concern about, is that the only place in which we can draw such leadership, and is there a concern about having the military involved at that level? I think the concern in the Pentagon with the prospect of major budget cuts forthcoming is whether we really are losing something with the bare-knuckle style that I think Secretary Gates exhibited in trying to bring Pentagon spending and the service arms under the control of the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And with some additional reductions now forthcoming, whether the soon-to-be Secretary Panetta will be willing to make those similar hard decisions that Secretary Gates had shown the capability of making. But the final part for me is clearly this is the time in an administration, in any administration, where people are told, if you're thinking about leaving, now is the time to leave. But if you don't leave now, we expect you to stay through the end of the first term. So you're going to sign up for the, whatever it is, 18 to 20 months that are remaining. So I think these may only be the first of some very high-level people to be leaving. We see Secretary Locke shifting out of Commerce to take over the ambassador position in China. But I wouldn't be surprised that these are the very first of the dominoes to topple, and many more will follow, especially many more in some of the areas that are much closer to the news that you and Tom and your colleagues cover there at WTOP.
Tom, the whole political appointee discussion usually centers around the number 18, and that's 18 months that most people stay. And so it seems to me that folks that are in place now that came in at the beginning of the administration are actually running overtime, really. And Secretary Gates made it very clear when he accepted the job that he didn't intend to stick around for the entire first term of the president's administration. So that part wasn't a surprise. But I guess some of the other moves to some folks were a little bit surprising, especially since it has been a little bit longer than people expected.
Well, maybe. I think that, of course, Secretary Gates, as you point out, was a holdover or reappointment, maybe, from the Bush administration. But, we had Anthony Cordesman. He's an old Pentagon guy. He's now at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Had him on this morning, and he pointed out a couple of things, and I want to point out a couple of things, too. One, there is a lot of precedent for having military people at the CIA, and the intelligence community is rife with DOD people. You know, there's General Clapper, who's the Director of National Intelligence, and, you know, General Hayden at the NSA. So that's not unheard of. When you have politicians at the CIA, the last time they did, it was a disaster. Porter Goss, who had been a member of the House Intelligence Committee for so many years, almost wrecked the place. In fact, career people left and came back after he was gone. So I think what I see the president doing here, though, is really playing it safe. Because with Leon Panetta, we know that he's a Democrat. We know that he's served in the Congress as a Democrat and served President Clinton as chief of staff. But he's not a doctrinaire Democrat, and whatever his political leanings are in some of the current debates about health care and that sort of thing, we really don't know. What I see is a shrewd Washington insider, knowledgeable guy who knows how to get things done, who's also very capable of protecting the agency from assault if he sees it coming. We've seen that happen a couple of times. Leon Panetta has really protected the prerogatives of the CIA against the Director of National Intelligence early on and won the fight. So I think that the president has a lot of confidence in Leon Panetta, and he's not a lightning rod politically, and so he might be able to get some of the things done that Secretary Gates has not been able to get done, which is getting some kind of force structure strategy in place, and once and for all, fixing procurement at the Pentagon, which despite all the efforts so far is still pretty bad shape. And then General Petraeus, I think the interesting thing there, it takes him out of the running for chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, apparently. But again, it's someone that the president has shown that he has a lot of faith and trust in, and also, again, someone whose politics are really unknown. So I think in cases where national security is ultimately at stake, the president has gone with very safe, reliable bets.
The credential that most people have talked about, and the one that struck me and about Mr. Panetta, is his tenure as OMB director when the Pentagon is in the budget situation that it's in. Let's explore that a little bit when we come back on the Federal News Countdown with Tom Temin and Alan Baludis, my experts counting down the three most important federal news stories of the week on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health issuing company and other factors. Not available in all states.
Babies will do everything they can to keep you from sleeping. And they'll do this for well over a year. They'll throw up on your sweater, in your hair, and all over your car. They'll not only poop in their pants, they'll poop on your pants. They'll pull your hair and quite literally bite the hand that feeds them. They will talk nonstop between the ages of 6 and 9, but they won't say a single word to you once they turn 13. And when they do, it'll likely involve disagreeing at rather high volumes. Still, you will love them like nothing else, and you will do anything and everything you can to keep them happy and healthy. And so will we. At Kaiser Permanente, we offer families the tools they need to grow up and grow old together, from prenatal care to postnatal care to pediatric care and beyond. Because although there's nothing that makes us crazier than our kids, there's nothing that makes us happier either. Kaiser Permanente, may your family live long and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formula.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT-IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and my guests counting down the top federal news stories of the week are Alan Baludis of Cisco and Tom Temin from the Federal Drive on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I mentioned before the break that the credential that Leon Panetta brings to the Pentagon that I find the most interesting is his tenure as OMB director, given the Pentagon is where it is budget-wise. And Alan Baludis, a lot of people have wondered, as the names were talked about in Washington about who might take the secretary's place, could the person that takes his place continue his efforts to cut the budget and change the way the Pentagon operates and do streamlining and so on? You're a former financial person in government, so you know the what's required to get those kinds of things done. Do you see Mr. Panetta as having the chops to do what he needs to do to continue Secretary Gates's efforts?
He's a very skilled and capable gentleman, as Tom alluded to when he was talking about this before the break. But I think he's certainly facing a major challenge. I mean, it was only a short time ago that the White House indicated that it's seeking an additional $400 billion in Pentagon cuts by 2023. And I think the reporters seem to suggest that that proposal blindsided the Pentagon, and it was given less than 24 hours advance notice of that plan. So you have some very tough budget decisions ahead and a time for really some very hard choices. You've got the costs of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan coming down. You have a number of major weapon systems that were procured and acquired during the Reagan budget years, submarines, surface ships, planes, all coming to the end of their life expectancy. I think Secretary Gates has made some very tough decisions on some of the most prized of the weapon systems at the Pentagon, such as the F-22 Raptor, you know, a high-end stealth fighter. So I think that Secretary Panetta, once he's confirmed, is going to face some very, very tough choices, rethinking of strategic priorities, and tough negotiations with the service arms in terms of hammering out a program and a budget going forward, with a lot of people pushing for even steeper reductions in Pentagon spending to get the deficit down.
Tom, what do you think about having a former OMB director at DOD, whether it's Mr. Panetta or somebody else? What's the message that you take away from that?
Well, I'm not sure the message is in him having been the OMB director. I think it's more, I still think the CIA is the more relevant piece for President Obama. But, yeah, I think, on the other hand, it is important that he was OMB director. But, you know, OMB pretty much concerns itself with civilian agencies, and they try to cooperate with the Defense Department. But it's always been its own budgetary animal in reality, even though OMB might have statutory say there. But culturally and kind of operationally, I think DOD has been on its own. I think for Panetta, the challenges will be making sure that he gets the confidence of the team there while still being able to assume the authority. I think he has the chops to do that. But you've got some good people. You've got, Ash Carter overlooking all the acquisition and technology. You've got Bob Hale as the comptroller. Bill Lynn as the deputy secretary. These are pretty able guys. And besides the weapon systems, which are a big debate, I think health care costs are going to be a huge issue for the Pentagon. They have to get some more rationality to what they pay out in TRICARE. Hasn't happened yet, but even Secretary Gates has characterized that as eating us alive on a couple of occasions. And then the force structure, which is the other big driver of cost. You know, what size force can we really afford in terms of how many people are in the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, and the Army? And then the third big piece will be the Pentagon, the standing bureaucracy itself, and they're going to have to get some kind of rationality over the systems they operate, the data centers they operate, the tail part, while they figure out what the tooth should be. So there are huge challenges ahead, and so Panetta's going to need all the help he can get from the experience there while somehow keeping that something the Pentagon always needs, which is a constant stream of fresh air.
Gentlemen, it is a great Federal News Countdown, as always. You've chosen as the number one story of the week the changes at the top of the national defense and intelligence structures. And